Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Tech Doctor podcast. I am Robert, the Tech Doctor, and along with me, as always, is Allison Hartley, the true Allison Hartley. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. It's cold here today, which is not to my liking. I'm wearing my fleece that I used in Antarctica.
Brr.
46 degrees outside.
Oh, that's a little cold for me.
Yeah.
I've become a California girl pretty quickly in terms of weather.
Yeah, no doubt. So it's kind of chilly, but hey, I guess that's to be expected here nearing the end of October.
Yeah.
Speaking of nearing the end of October, we have another new Apple event coming up this
Woo-hoo!
Week. Where I'm guessing we're going to see new iPads. Do you believe we will see an iPad mini Retina display?
Well, I think it's kind of the natural progression of things. I'm hoping that they will come out with an iPad mini Retina display.
Yeah, given the fact that some of the other tablets, the new Kindle Fire, the Nexus 7, have Retina displays, I think Apple would really be in trouble, in a sense, or would really get a lot of bad press if they didn't come out with the iPad mini Retina.
Yeah.
However, they won't do it if they can't get the kind of battery life that they always want. And I don't know what kind of battery life these other Retina small tablets get. But we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
It will be interesting. I'm pretty sure we'll see a new iPad, large iPad,
mm-hmm.
that will probably be, you know, with a smaller bezel and thinner than the current generation of iPad. I think the big iPad will look much like the design of the iPad mini.
Oh, cool.
And I think we'll see new MacBook Pros with the Haswell chip.
And I hope so.
I'm betting we'll get an announcement about when Mavericks will be released.
Can't wait.
Yeah, and I want to just talk for just a moment about the upcoming release of Mavericks, because Apple is kind of unique in the way that they go about these software releases. Anymore, the new OS is not available on DVD. It's only available through the Mac App Store. And we don't know yet what the price of Mavericks will be, but it's usually really cheap, like I think $19 or $29 or something like that.
Yes, seriously cheap.
They don't charge much for the new version of the OS X software. And really, I don't know what your experience has been, but really it's designed in such a way that one, if your machine will run Mavericks, which any machine that will run Mountain Lion will also run Mavericks, it's designed in such a way that you really should just be able to update as if you're just doing any kind of software update, and you really shouldn't have problems. You know, it used to be back in the earlier days, especially in the Windows days, you were probably wise to reformat your drive and install a new operating system from scratch. But that's not really, in my opinion, necessary on these modern Macs. Have you had experience updating that way?
Yeah, I've gone through now two software updates on the Mac, two major releases, and I've never had any problems just upgrading.
You've gone from, you've updated Lion that way, and then I guess Mountain Lion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, my experience was like that updating from Snow Leopard to Lion. I had no problems at all. But when I went from Lion to Mountain Lion, something got corrupted in my user folder.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know what it was, but my system became really unstable.
Ooh.
And I tried updating again, and it still was unstable. And I tried restoring some of my data from backup and did some different things, and ultimately ended up just reformatting and updating and reinstalling my apps and everything from scratch, because I didn't want to recreate my user directory, because right. I knew that I was just pretty sure that's where somehow the corruption was.
Yeah.
And so point is that even though it's almost certain that your upgrade will go fine, they don't always. Mm-hmm. And most people didn't have this problem that I had. In fact, you know, there were several people that are friends, and I just know tons of people that did just what you did, upgraded from Lion to Mountain Lion with no problems at all. So it's unusual when this happens. But the point is, you need to have good backups. I recommend that people have two types of backups before upgrading to Mavericks. And one of them is a bootable backup, which means creating a clone of your system that onto a hard drive that will actually boot, just in case you need to, you get in trouble, have trouble with the update, you need to boot from that clone and restore something, or even boot from the clone temporarily to get some work done or something. And there are two really great programs for making these clones. One's called Carbon Copy Cloner, and the other one is called Super Duper. And those are two excellent backup programs. They're both accessible with VoiceOver. I personally use Super Duper. Now they are both programs that you have to pay for. I think they're roughly somewhere between the $30 and $40 range. I don't know the exact prices of either of them, but they're not terribly expensive, and they really are. I think it's very important to have a bootable clone before going from one operating system to another. It's important to have a bootable clone anyway. And I update my clone once a week. I also use Time Machine as a backup strategy. And Time Machine is good for if you need to go back and get a particular file that maybe you deleted by accident, or something happens to a file. But Time Machine deletes its oldest data when it starts running out of space on your hard drive. And so Time Machine was never intended to be a permanent archive, but it's just kind of a snapshot that you can go in and get files from if you need to. You can restore your system from Time Machine, but it's really slow, especially if you're doing it across a network.
I bet.
And it's not the way that I would recommend people do it, although I've heard of people doing it. And a lot of people use a third kind of backup, which is an offsite backup, something like CrashPlan or Carbon Copy Cloner for offsite, where you actually back up your data to the cloud by uploading whatever parts of your data are important to you to have a backup to an offsite service. And I don't, have you ever experimented with any of those?
I have not. I've heard of one called Backblaze.com. I think I heard about it on one of the 5x5 podcasts. And I went to create an account, and the account creation process was not accessible on the Mac side. And I can't remember why I didn't try it with all of my different screen reader and browser combinations on the Windows side. So I have to go back and try that again, because it is $5 a month, I believe, for unlimited backup sizes. So I just want to check it out. You can't really go wrong for $5 a month.
Yeah. I've heard of Backblaze. I've never used offsite backup strategies. I've thought of trying one myself, and I know that that a lot of people use CrashPlan, which is also a good one. And I understand that it's reasonably accessible, but you do have to have, at this point, unless they've changed it, I'm pretty sure you still have to have Java installed on your Mac, and I don't have Java installed, so it's kind of put me off on trying CrashPlan, but it's probably the one that I would try. I understand they're coming out with a new interface, and it isn't going to be Java-based. But the offsite backups, you know, are intriguing in some ways. It really can take a very long time, though, to upload your data to one of them if you have a lot of data.
And I do.
Yeah, and some of them will actually allow you to send your data to them on a hard drive, and they will seed it for you. They will put it into their system so you don't have to spend the days and weeks and maybe months letting it all upload. Because unfortunately, most of us are on cable modems of some sort, and it's pretty typical for a cable provider to give us slower upload speeds than download speeds.
Yep.
And so that just makes the problem even more annoying of trying to upload tons and tons of data. So I don't know. They have pros and cons. There's another one that is not necessarily just is really not specifically a backup service, but I've talked about it before, and I think I'm going to do more exploring of it. It's called the File Transporter, and we might come back to that one at some point when I get around to really digging into it more. But point being, I just encourage everyone to make some good backups before you install Maverick, just in case you need them. Because I sure ran into a situation going to Mountain Lion where I did need my backups. I didn't actually restore my data directly from backups, at least not in one fell swoop, but I did find it very useful to be able to look at my clone, to copy certain files, especially all my documents and things like that, back into my system. And it was also nice to be able to look and see, you know, which apps I had installed on my clone.
Right.
It's really helpful if you can collect all the information about your apps, like serial numbers and registration keys and things like that, in one place. It's easier these days if you have a lot of apps that you purchase from the Mac App Store. You can easily install them if you need to reinstall them just by going to the App Store and looking at your already purchased apps and selecting them again, and they'll just download. So you don't have to have license keys for those, which does make it a lot easier. But for a lot of apps, at least ones that you didn't get through the Mac App Store for whatever reason, a lot of them do require some type of registration or license keys. I keep all mine in an application called 1Password. And 1Password is an app that has just come out with version 4 of their application. And it is, like the predecessor version 3, very accessible with VoiceOver, especially the main program itself. There is a toolbar version that sort of runs and lets you access some things pretty quickly called 1Password Mini. And it seems quite accessible with VoiceOver, but anything that doesn't work quite right in 1Password Mini, you can also do from inside the main program. And I've been using it for a while. Not only can you store your passwords for websites that you log into, but you can also store information like serial numbers for software, notes about things that you want to keep. You can, if you want, store your credit card information in 1Password and have that information automatically entered into websites where you're purchasing something. There's just a lot that you can do with this software. And it's called 1Password because you only have to remember 1Password, which is the master password, which gets you into everything else that's inside the program.
Nice.
And this program will allow you to sync it across multiple devices, including your Apple, your Mac, your iOS devices. There's a version of 1Password for Windows. I believe there's a version for Android. And so you can, if you choose to use either iCloud, if you're using Apple devices, or use Dropbox, if you're using a mixture of devices, or you can use your own Wi-Fi network to as the syncing agent. But I use Dropbox, and this does mean that your 1Password information is stored in Dropbox, but it's heavily encrypted with really strong encryption, and no one has that encryption key, so no one can get into this information. At least that's what AgileBits, the makers of 1Password, tell us, and I have found them to be a very trustworthy company. So I guess there's a slight risk there with putting your encrypted passwords in Dropbox, but it's a risk that I feel okay about taking. I mean, each person has to decide that. But with my passwords and information all there, I have access to them on my Mac, my iPhone, my iPad, my Windows machine at work, and so forth and so on. So it makes it very simple to automatically log in to websites or retrieve software license keys, things like that.
Very cool. I've been meaning to check 1Password out forever now, so I actually have to just do it.
Yeah, it's quite a nice program. There is going to be an iCloud keychain feature in Mavericks that's going to offer some of the functionality of 1Password and going to work with the Mac and Safari, and I'm guessing eventually with the iOS devices. And if that's the world that you live in, you know, for a lot of people, the new iCloud keychain might be adequate, but it won't offer you the capability to go cross-platform the way that I'm doing, and it won't offer you the ability to store additional things like software license keys and other you know, personal information that you want to keep safe and keep track of. I still think 1Password is going to be for a lot of people the better choice, but at least for someone who, you know, doesn't want to get into 1Password for whatever reason, there is going to be this new option in Mavericks that one can certainly check out. So how's it going for you with iOS 7 and the new iPhone 5S? How you liking it?
I am loving my new iPhone 5S, especially, of course, the fingerprint reader, which was the main reason I decided to upgrade from the 5, because the 5 is a really good phone. It's a great phone, but I am noticing that the 5S is just a little bit faster. I wouldn't necessarily say twice as fast, like was indicated at the announcement of the iPhone 5S, but it's definitely a little bit faster, and that fingerprint reader makes it worth standing in line at the Verizon store.
Yeah, you know, I've heard some people say that the fingerprint reader is not all that reliable for them, that they get a lot of try again messages, but you know, and I've used it, I use it dozens of times every day, and maybe I just have a good finger for it, but I almost never get a try again message.
Me too. I very rarely get a try again message.
It's very, very rare that I get one. And so I don't know, you know, why it seems to vary. I have noticed that it is, if you get in the habit of laying your finger, you know, kind of squarely on the center of the home button, it works well. It if you're at an odd angle or something, I think it can sometimes ask you to try again. But
that's what I found too.
But I found that it is plenty. It's fast enough for me that I don't even really notice that much of a difference between unlocking my phone this way than unlocking it before when I didn't have a passcode in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It maybe takes us, you know, half a second longer or something, but I find it to be really fast.
I find it in a lot of ways to be faster than the old slide to unlock method, for sure.
I don't know how you do it, but I've discovered that, you know, you can just tap and release the home button and just leave your finger resting
there, yep,
on it, and the phone will automatically unlock.
Yeah, it's real nice and smooth that way.
Yeah, so if you just take that approach, I used to be in the habit of mostly using the sleep-wake button to lock and unlock my phone.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've switched to using the
home button.
It works really well. You know, I've heard some people talk about various bugs that they've seen, problems that they've had. I don't remember exactly what a lot of them were at this point. I've experienced very few bugs that are really problematic for me. The biggest one that I have experienced, which is really troubling to me, is that for whatever reason, on the iPad third generation, for me anyway, mBraille is just about unusable in iOS 7. It's just something has gone wrong with the way VoiceOver operates with it, and it's just very unreliable. You can keep your fingers very still without moving them around and start typing, and sometimes it'll tell you it's one letter, and sometimes it'll tell you it's another letter, even if you've typed exactly the same thing. And it's really disconcerting and disappointing to me. And Hari tried to implement some sort of workaround in a recent update to mBraille, but it didn't help for me at all. He and I have discovered that the problem appears to only be in evidence when you have VoiceOver turned on.
Hmm.
So it seems to be some sort of VoiceOver issue on the iPad.
Hmm.
I only hope that, you know, it will be resolved, because I really enjoyed using mBraille on the iPad, and now I don't use it at all.
Yeah.
Gosh. So that's the biggest, most concrete bug that I've seen. I have experienced recently the iMessage bug that a lot of people are talking about on the various Apple podcasts, where you send an iMessage and it just doesn't go anywhere. It just doesn't send.
Huh.
And you don't really, you may not realize that it didn't send.
Mm-hmm.
Although normally when I send an iMessage, I hear a little announcement saying message sent, or hear a little swishing sound, something like that. And I didn't hear that. And so I wondered, but, you know, there's no message. Normally when you send a message, you have that message show up in your messages.
And then it says delivered. Yeah.
Yeah. But no message shows up. So, so it's just gone. It's just like it didn't go anywhere. And the only solution, well, there are two proposed solutions at the moment, workaround solutions. One that usually always works is just to restart the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to rewrite your message and try sending it again.
Yeah.
And it works the second time. The other that some people have said is a more lasting solution is to go in and delete your network settings for some reason, and then obviously you have to re-enter your passwords for your Wi-Fi and things like that. But if some people have said that fixes it at least for a while, but
mm-hmm.
Apple's aware of it, and they're going to be coming out with the next patch, whatever it is, for iOS 7 is going to resolve the issue. So I'm thinking it'll be fixed soon. But what have you run into problems?
I haven't, and you know, I've been testing iOS 7 since beta 1. So I've been living with it now for a few months. And of course, there were, you know, numerous bugs in the betas. But since iOS 7 was publicly released, I have not really noticed any bugs either on my 5 or my 5S. I know there are some 5S specific bugs that people are having, like different volume issues and stuff like that. And I feel bad because it's almost like people get frustrated when I'm like, I haven't experienced this, but it's true. I really have not experienced any bugs that I have noticed that have made it any more difficult to use my phone. It's just trucking along.
Yeah, that's really the case for me, other than this iMessaging bug. I just haven't seen any showstoppers for me, and I'm on a couple different iOS oriented mailing lists, and it's just amazing to me the variation that I see. Some people are like you and just incredibly happy with it, and other people are incredibly unhappy with it. And I've kind of decided that there's probably more going on than just the operating system itself. We all have our own workflows and our own styles of doing things. And, you know, it turns out that my style, sounds like yours, for whatever reason, seems to work really well with the way that we use the current iteration of iOS 7.
Yeah. I mean, I have definitely noticed, but this was, you know, from beta 1. Well, Siri was in beta 2 or 3, the new male and female voices. I have definitely noticed that Siri has slowed down just a little bit, but at least for me, it's not a showstopper. And Siri was never terribly fast to begin with for me. So I guess it just doesn't really bother me. I'm you know, it's kind of what you get when you decide to use Siri. A little bit of lag will sometimes happen.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people saying that they're getting a lot more times with Siri where it's saying, I can't process your request right now or something like that. And I never see that.
You know, I had experienced that when iOS 7 was first publicly released. I was experiencing that more frequently, but they seem to have done something on their end. Apple has to address that. I don't get it nearly as often. Sometimes he will interrupt himself, and it'll make the little doodunk sound like, it'll be like, your message said doodunk, and then I'll have to just flick left and manually read what my message said. But again, for me, that's just not a showstopper.
Yeah, for me either. You know, and I've even heard some people wanting to go back to iOS 6.
Oh, God, no.
And I can't even imagine that.
No.
There are so many advantages to iOS 7 that I couldn't imagine it.
Yeah, no, I could never do it.
So I guess people have different experiences, and that's just how it is. I mean, I guess when you have an install base of so many millions of people and everyone with different ways of working, as I said, and different hardware and in various conditions, and you know, there are a lot of uncontrolled variables there. But still, it surprises me that anyone would feel that way, because it's so out of context to what my experience has been.
Yeah, mine too.
So I don't really know what to make of all that. I guess there's always, you know, as human beings, we all, and some of us more than others, I guess, are reluctant to make changes and adopt something new, and maybe that's part of it.
Could be.
I know. It almost seems like in some ways, the greater changes have been for sighted and low vision people than for people who rely on voiceover.
I definitely agree in terms of the voiceover experience. I mean, things have remained largely the same with the addition of the handwriting feature, which is actually trying to inspire me to improve my handwriting a little bit.
I haven't even played with it. Have you tried it?
I've tried it. I'm at the point now where I'm able to consistently make letters, but they're not always the letters that I think they're going to be.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's kind of where I would be with it too. I would probably be pretty inaccurate. It's been so long since I've even thought about doing any handwriting other than just signing my name.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I do too.
And that's pretty sloppy for me.
Yeah, my signature is not anything to write home about.
No pun intended. Couldn't write home about it if you wanted to. At least not in handwriting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm having a really great experience with iOS 7. Nothing to really complain about that is anywhere near a showstopper for me. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens and how things get patched and changed and all, but I don't see how I could be much happier with it at this point.
Yeah, no, me neither. And this is not just Apple fandom here, guys. We, you know, if we had experienced bugs, we would have been honest and talked about them, but really it seems like we both had a really easy transition, especially to the 5S with 7.
Some people are saying that they are experiencing a lot more crashes with their phone, especially with the 5S, and I just haven't, mine hasn't been crashing. And
no, I haven't had a single crash since I got it.
So maybe it's the apps, you know, that people are using. Maybe we're just not using apps that are resulting in crashes. But you know, I've and these are not people who are using accessibility. These are on, I just heard the We Have Communicators podcast just this morning for this week, and Jeff Gamet and Adam Christensen were talking about that they both were experiencing some crashes on their 5S's that they hadn't experienced on the 5. And these guys are really knowledgeable, really expert iOS users. Yeah. And so that surprised me to hear about that, because again, it just hasn't been my experience. So
no, nor mine.
So we'll see what comes next. And I'm betting that we're going to see some updates to iOS 7 pretty soon and pretty regularly, because I know that they're are things that are being patched and being worked on. So we'll be talking about it as it happens, I'm sure.
Yep. Stay tuned, folks.
Yep, stay tuned. Well, one thing I wanted to talk just a little bit about is I've been playing with an app that really brings some additional functionality to InBraille. And this app is called Drafts. It's a note-taking app, basically, but it's kind of unique in the way that it works. First of all, when you open up Drafts, it just opens up into an edit field, a text box, so you can immediately start writing a note. And you can, of course, write a note using the regular on-screen keyboard. You could use a Bluetooth keyboard, but you can also use InBraille. Hari has given a dot command, a dot drafts command, or you can also use .da on a line by itself. And what that will do is automatically send your InBraille text into a drafts note.
Nice.
And so so this text, once it's in Drafts, you have a lot of choices about what you can do with it. And Drafts is kind of, this is where it's a kind of a unique piece of software, because you just have a piece of text that you have either written in Drafts or that you've sent from InBraille straight into Drafts. And once it's in there, Drafts has this whole slate of actions that you can take on the text. You can use the default actions that are built into drafts, do things like send this text to the clipboard, send it out as a tweet, send it as an email message. And a lot of these things are not that great for us InBrail users because a lot of them are already built into InBrail. So you don't necessarily need drafts for them. But drafts also let you do things like send the draft to your Dropbox, for example. So you can have your note go to Dropbox. You can set up an action that will have drafts make the first line of your note be the title of the note, and then the body below that be the regular note if you want to. So you could create all kinds of lists or information. You can set up an action that will let you keep appending to the same note in your Dropbox if you wanted to. In my case, like someone that I was working with or something, and I wanted to keep adding to those notes each day or each week, I could simply set up an action that would let me write that note in InBrail and have it appended then to the bottom of the existing note. Or you can have it put the new text at the top of the note. Or you can do all kinds of things and have this sent to your Dropbox. You can also use what's called Markdown language in your notes. Drafts understands Markdown, which means you can just in a plain text note, you can do things like bolding and underlining and add formatting characteristics using the Markdown language, which is all text-based. So it's really ideal for a voiceover user or an InBrail user because you're just entering text symbols. And then you can have drafts translate that Markdown into formatted text. So there's a lot you can do with this app. Interestingly enough, you can also take a drafts note and send that note back to InBrail.
Oh, cool.
Because there's a way to, using a URL linking scheme, there's a way to simply set up one of these actions that will just take the drafts note, put it back into InBrail so you can edit on it some more, and then send it back to drafts if you like. So drafts is very voiceover accessible. I've only found one possible area that doesn't seem to work. At least I haven't figured out how to make it work with voiceover. Drafts does have the ability to let you decide where you want to keep these notes. You can either keep them in what they call the inbox, or you can send them to an archive area, or you can put them on what's called a pin board. And you put them on the pin board if you want the notes to be readily available. It's almost like a favorites list or a list you want to get to easily. The way you go about moving these notes from the inbox to archived or to the pin board, at least as far as I can tell right now, doesn't seem to be doable with voiceover.
Okay.
I've written the developer about this, and maybe he will tell me that, yeah, it is doable. It looks like it's possible that it might be doable by cutting the note to the clipboard and then going into the archive area, for example, and then pasting the draft there. But that's kind of a cumbersome way to do it. There's a way, if you're not using VoiceOver, you can swipe left or right on the draft and then drag it into the whichever pane you want it to go in, and that will move it, say, from the inbox to the archived area. But that doesn't seem to be I can double tap and hold and swipe, and I get a menu of options at that point, but the menu doesn't include an option to move it to one of the other panes. And maybe that's something that could be added for VoiceOver users in the future. It's not a big deal. I just keep them all in my inbox. There is actually a way that you can have drafts automatically move a draft note once you're done with it into one of these other areas, but I just have mine set to leave them all in the inbox right now. And I mean, that's fine. I think that this is a real way to expand the usefulness of InBrail, because it gives you a very easy way, at the very least, to get your text that you create in InBrail directly into your Dropbox. And then, you know, you can do whatever you want with it at that point. So it's kind of exciting, actually.
Yeah, it sounds very powerful. I want to try it.
Yeah, Drafts is available in the iOS App Store. It is a $2.99, $3 purchased app.
So that's expensive. No.
You have to put out the big bucks for it. But I found that it works really well. It's very flexible in how you can customize it and set it up. And I actually went to their website, which is called AgileTortoise.com is the name of the company. And they have documentation for Drafts, including some videos. And the developer does a nice job of talking you through what he's doing on these videos. But there's also text-based documentation. And you can really figure it out, teach yourself how to use the different features of it. Once you kind of get the hang of it, it isn't hard. And it's quite flexible, but there is some setup in terms of creating these templates if you want it to do various things. Like I have one template set up called Note with Title, and what this does is it automatically, when I tap on this action, it automatically takes whatever note is currently in focus and makes the first line of the note the title of it, and the rest of it the actual note itself. And
nice.
And that, you know, and then goes ahead and sends it to Dropbox. And so just a lot of flexibility there. Anyway, I hope that's reasonably clear. I decided to talk about it rather than demonstrate it right now, but you all let me know whether my explanation made sense or not. And it's certainly something that if you especially are into using InBrail, you might want to give a try. But even if you don't use InBrail and you want to enter notes on your device from the regular keyboard or from another keyboard, Drafts is really usable in that way also.
Cool. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, it's just another note-taking option. The fact that it has Markdown, the fact that it has a lot of flexibility in terms of what you can do with that note once you've written it, makes it pretty attractive. And, you know, we've seen lots of other notes apps, including we talked about at one point Access Note, mm-hmm. from the American Foundation for the Blind. And it's obviously still a useful app, but it doesn't have some of the features that Drafts has.
No.
So that's one that I just wanted to pass along. And finally, before we finish up today, I'm wondering, now that our government isn't shut down, are you enjoying the Bard app again?
Oh my goodness, I have read so many books on the Bard app since it came out. It's a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Because I speed them up to 300%, and I have read, I've lost count, actually. I just...
Well, I started keeping track of my books back in July, the number of books that I read. So I log each one that when I start it, and then I note it in the database when I finish it.
I need to do that.
Yeah, and there's an app called Read It Now, which I really like for doing that. That's what I do it all on my iPhone. And I was surprised to go back and kind of look at the data and realize that since July 17th, I have read 36 books.
Wow.
So I have really been reading from Bard, from iBooks, from Kindle, the Nook app. You know, just it's just amazing, really. there are some new reading opportunities coming along. One of them is called Oyster, where you pay $10 a month and get access to lots of books. I contacted them, and they said that their app is accessible with VoiceOver. They have an iPhone and an iPad app now.
Mm-hmm.
But they also said the app had not been thoroughly tested with VoiceOver. I wrote back and offered to thoroughly test it if they wanted that, and mm-hmm. I have not heard back from them. So I don't know yet really to what extent Oyster is or isn't accessible with VoiceOver. They're offering now, I think, a 30-day free trial. So
nice.
Perhaps one of us should try it out and see whether it works well enough to recommend it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another source called audiobooks.com that I've been hearing about, and it appears to be a direct competitor to audible.com. And I wrote Audiobooks and asked them, was their iOS app accessible with VoiceOver? And they wrote back and said no. And I wrote back and said, would you be interested in working on making it accessible? Because there are a lot of people who would probably be interested in using it out here. And they wrote back and said, no, we would not at this time.
Huh.
So I was a bit surprised by that response and don't really know what to make of it, but it looks like audiobooks.com isn't accessible at the moment, and we can only hope that perhaps they will realize the importance and make the necessary changes in the future.
That's wow.
Yeah. we don't get that response nearly as often as we used to. So the woman was very nice, you know, and very polite, and I was very nice and polite to her, but the answer was clearly we have no interest in doing that at this time. So
it takes a little effort. That's what a lot of these developers don't understand, is that it really, the tools that they need to add accessibility to their apps are built right into Xcode.
Yeah, it is. I was surprised by that. But anyway, one thing that I've discovered recently that's really nice on the Bard app is that if you haven't found it yet or you don't know about it, there is a music section in the Library of Congress system. And a lot of what's in the music section is audio, things like music lessons, for example. A lot of that audio is available for download through Bard. I am thinking about it as I'm talking about it here, and I honestly cannot remember whether or not I don't think I did use the Bard app to download the music lessons that I'm currently working with. So I'm not sure whether you need to go on the website or whether you can actually do it through the app. Do you know the answer to that?
I think you can, because you can browse the website and just type in what you're looking for.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that browsing the website includes browsing the music collection.
Yeah, there's a category search.
And downloading something. So I found the Bill Brown music lessons. A lot of them are on Bard. I'm studying the guitar by ear lessons that he offers. And after 45 years of playing the guitar, I'm now back to playing scales and playing them very diligently. And but he really does a great job of talking you through exactly what the fingering needs to be, and shows you exactly how to do it, how to play the various major and minor scales. And I think he has lessons for lots of instruments, since it's the Bill Brown series. So there's a lot of good stuff up there. And I think, like me, for example, I've gotten even more interested and excited about checking it out now that the app is out.
Yeah, because you can literally just do it from anywhere. I know I want to check out the guitar lessons, and I also have this, I've always wanted to play the flute.
Yeah.
And I saw on Amazon a practice flute for like $100. So I'm thinking at some point I'm going to just pick it up and get the real Bill Brown flute lesson and just try it, you know?
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
There's something so rewarding about playing a musical instrument.
And
there's something really great as far as keeping the plasticity of your brain if you go to the trouble to teach yourself something like music or a language or something like that. It really helps a lot in terms of keeping your brain nimble, and so go for that flute. It's
definitely, I've been singing for 15 years, but I want to get more into the, you know, I always kind of put instruments on the back burner, so I want to try to get back into it.
Yeah, it's great to go through that creative process and that learning process, and the opportunities for doing that are enhanced by all of the online lessons that are available.
Yeah.
You don't have to necessarily go out somewhere and take lessons anymore.
Exactly, because that can get so expensive so quickly.
It can, and also, you know, it's hard for a lot of us to find the time to add some structure like that to our schedule. But
right, getting there, getting back, yeah, it just adds up time-wise.
Yeah, but when it's there,
it's
anytime
right
you want it, you know, I'm imagining you playing the flute a lot at 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yep. I'm sure my neighbors will love me.
Oh, yeah. Husbands, neighbors, all are going to really look forward to that.
Well, see, Jeremy's a musician too, so he wouldn't care so much, but I think the neighbors would probably have something to say. Although we're moving soon, so.
Yeah. Tell them to be really glad that it
isn't. Open your mind, man. It's the flute.
It's not the tuba you've taken up, or the slide trombone, or the drums.
Yes.
It could be worse.
Yes, although I do also want to learn the drums at some point.
That will be even more interesting when it comes to dealing with neighbors, I'm quite
sure.
Yeah. All right, well, we have really covered quite a few topics here.
Sure,
but
have.
It's nice to be podcasting again, and
definitely,
we're going to be back soon doing something more in depth on the new Bard app as soon,
yep,
as we get the details of that worked out. And I'm sure we'll also be back soon to talk about whatever the big announcements are on this coming Tuesday from Apple, because I'm sure they're going to announce a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah,
I expect even likely there will be some surprises in there.
I think so. I think that one more thing, or possibly even two more things.
We might hear about several more things.
Yeah.
Just have to wait and see. But thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to drop us an email if you would like to get in touch with us and let us know what you would like to know more about or less about, or how this is going for you. We're always happy to hear from you. So, and you can send that email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. Till next time, this is Robert saying so long from me.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.